The following is a lecture given at the home of Madan Rao by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on December 11th, 2006, in Mumbai, India.
Om Akhyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakadam Hayam Vidati Svapadantikam. So, thank you very much for inviting us to your home this evening. So, this human form of life is a very, very rare opportunity how to elevate the consciousness beyond the animal platform. Animal platform means eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. If in this human form of life we do nothing more than to eat, to sleep, to have sexual pleasure, and to defend ourselves against the attackers, how are we any better than animals? The dog, he defends with his claws and his teeth. We defend with our rifles and our tanks and our hand grenades. It is the same thing, fighting and killing. How have we elevated our consciousness beyond the animal platform? That which distinguishes human life from animal life, that is described in Vedanta Sutra. Perhaps you have heard of Vedanta Sutra. You have heard, yes. It is described in Vedanta Sutra. Tato Brahma Jigyasa. Now that you have achieved this human form of life, this must be utilized for Krishna. This human form of life must be utilized to reawaken your dormant enlightened consciousness. You must inquire what is the nature of the absolute truth. There are so many relative truths. Just like one relative truth is, it is now 7:06 p.m. That is a relative truth. Because in Malaysia it is a different time. In Australia it is a different time. In Fiji it is a different time. So 7:06 p.m. is true in Mumbai. So it is relative truth, but it is not absolute truth. There are so many relative truths. This is a world full of relative truths. Vedanta Sutra says, don't be so much concerned with the relative truths now that you have human body. Now you must find out what is the absolute truth. This is the real meaning of Indian culture. Taj Mahal, everyone thinks Indian culture is Taj Mahal. People come from all over the world to India, they think Indian culture, Taj Mahal. Is Taj Mahal real Indian culture? No. Has nothing to do with the real culture of India, actually. I've been coming to India for 20 years. How many times have I gone to Taj Mahal? Zero. I was even in Agra. for some preaching program. I did not see Taj Mahal. Because it is not the real culture of India. The real culture of India is Tato, Brahma Jigyasa. Now you have a human form, you must become spiritually enlightened. You see, that is Indian culture. If you are a true son or daughter of India, then you must pursue the pathway of spiritual enlightenment. But now, what is the pathway everyone wants to follow in India? High tech. Let us become pakka mlechas. That is what they're doing now. But we are against that. That is not Indian culture. I'm not even born here. But I, by following Prabhupada, I've become the true son of Indian culture. You see. Actually, Indian culture is not limited to this geographic region. You know, before the Kali Yuga, Indian culture was the whole planet. Bharat referred to the whole planet Earth. The whole planet Earth was called Bharatvarsh. The whole planet. North America, South America, Australia, Africa, Europe, this was all part of India. When Maharaj Parikshit was sitting on the bank of the holy river, hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, sages came from all over the world. They came from Europe. Even there was a sage who came from Europe. You know that? And of course there were sages from other planets also came to that assembly. So formerly, the whole planet, that was India. Of course they didn't say India, they said Bharat. Same thing. Bharat was the whole planet. So therefore, actually, we are all Indians on this planet. But we have lost our culture. Just like the Pakistanis, how much they have lost Indian culture. That was India before partition. You see. How much they have lost Indian culture now. So in other parts, Europe also, formerly it was part of India. America, it was all part of India. But the culture has been separated. That's it. So, now in India they want to get rid of it also. They want to wear blue jeans, and they want to grow their hair like a movie star. In this way, you see. They want to become cool and sexy, isn't it? The youth. They don't realize there's a word, a French word, passé, which means it's old hat. Old fashioned. Bhagavatam says, punak punas charvata charvananam. Same thing. In the West, we've been trying to enjoy like that for many, many decades. And there's nothing left. It's just old and boring and dry. For hundreds of years in the West, they've been trying to enjoy sense gratification. And they've never been satisfied by doing it. But now in India, they think if we can enjoy sense gratification like the Westerners, then we will finally become happy. How foolish. And we see that when the Indian people come to America, they become very excited. Prabhupada said, when the garbage dump is there, and the crows, they go every day and they eat the garbage, and it's no big deal, they just pick through the garbage. But then some new crow comes, and he's very excited. Oh, big garbage. He's all excited. So Prabhupada said, when the Indian people, they go to America, they are new crows. Because all the Americans, they say, well, this is all boring, you know. Where's the happiness? Maybe we should go to India and get a guru, you know. Where's the happiness in all of this sense gratification? That's what happened to me, you see. I was born in America back in, just after World War II. When America was just exploding, you know, all the new houses and the freeways. It was all just starting. It was brand new. And the 60s came in and the youth said, what is this? We're a rich, powerful country in the world. But what are we doing? We're simply exploiting other people. This is stupid. We must find a higher purpose in life than this. So Prabhupada came and he taught us that higher purpose, you see. Chant Hare Krishna. Surrender to the Supreme Guru. Do not remain a fool running after sense gratification like a dog chasing his tail. You seen a dog chase the tail? Isn't it silly? He's running like this, going nowhere. So our modern day civilization throughout the whole world, in India, Europe, America, everywhere, we are simply a tail-chasing civilization. Spinning in circles, going nowhere. Every day, get out there, run, 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 get to the train, squeeze into the train. You see? What is the result of all of this? You simply get old, and you get sick, and you die. What have you accomplished? Of becoming Pakka Mumbaiite. What have you accomplished by becoming a big, big Bombayite? What have you accomplished? You see? Nothing. You've accomplished nothing. What's the use of it? The dog is, he's scrounging for his meals, you're scrounging for your meals. What is the difference? The difference is, if you can awaken your dormant enlightened consciousness within, if you can reconnect with God, you see, then you can be happy in any condition. In India, America, Europe, in the city, in the country, it doesn't matter. If you can connect with God, then you can be always happy in all times, all places, and all circumstances. You see. One simply has to reconnect with God. That system is called yoga. You see. Yoga system. So, there are different types of yoga systems. Hatha yoga, jnana yoga, karma yoga, ashtanga yoga, sankhya yoga, raja yoga, so many types of yoga. So, they are just like on a ladder. There are different rungs on the ladder. Krishna says, of all the yogis, all the different types of yoga system, this bhakti yoga system, it is the topmost system. So, if you can follow this bhakti path, then whatever you can achieve from any type of yoga, it is automatically included in bhakti. The nice thing about the bhakti system is you can achieve perfection, spiritual perfection in one lifetime through bhakti system. Other yogas, it takes many lifetimes to achieve perfection. But in bhakti system, in one lifetime you can get out of the cycle of birth and death, go back to home, back to Godhead. So therefore, Krishna recommends sarva dharman puridyojo mame kangshadanam vajam aham tvang sarva papebhyo mokshiya shami mashuchaha. Give up all other duties, simply surrender to me. I will deliver you from all of your sinful reactions. Do not fear, Arjuna. So if we can simply take to this bhakti system, which is centered around chanting the holy names of God as prescribed by Krishna himself in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatam tascha dridarvata. He says, always chanting my glories. That is the order of Krishna. You see. Krishna is saying we should always be engaged in chanting. So as far as possible, every day we should fill up our 24 hours in chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. By doing this, we will connect ourselves with the Supreme Person. He will shower His unlimited mercy upon us. The problems of our life will become reduced practically to nil if we will simply take shelter of these names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram. So we can ask now if you have any questions. Competing with these little ones out here. Say that again. Before he came out of the womb, he was an impersonal. In the womb of his mother, he was impersonal. But he heard Bhagavatam from his father while he was still within the womb. And simply by hearing Bhagavatam, he was converted from impersonalist to personalist. And then he came out. What's the use of staying in the womb now? He was afraid to come out because, as an impersonalist, he was afraid of being exposed to the material nature. But personalist has no fear of the material nature. Because he sees everything as the energy of Krishna. He engages everything in the service of Krishna. He has nothing to fear from the material nature. But impersonalist is very fearful of the material nature.
Why impersonalist is fearful?
The impersonalist is fearful because in the material nature entraps one and ensnares one and keeps one in the cycle of birth and death. The impersonalist's only shelter is try to negate it and say it's all false. It's false. It's just an illusion. But he has no higher taste to take shelter of it. The only thing he can do is try to deny. Neti, neti. Not this, not that, not this, not that. It's not money. It's not sex pleasure. It's not fame. It's not power. It's not this, it's not that. But what it is, he doesn't know. Therefore, he has nothing positive to hang on to. All he can do is keep negating. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. It's hard to keep denying and denying and denying and denying and denying and denying. It's an artificial position. We are not meant to live in a completely negative atmosphere where everything is negative. This is false, that is false, everything is false, you see. That's a very artificial position. How you can even function? I mean, if everything is false, then why are you breathing? If everything is false, then what's the point of you inhaling? You see? Pretty impractical. I mean, why eat? Everything is false. You're reinforcing the false conception of the body by eating. And by breathing also. Everything is false and I should stop breathing, I shouldn't eat, shouldn't do anything. Is that very practical? So the impersonalist, he's in a very precarious position. The slightest material allurement can completely steal him away. Everything is a threat to him. Everything's a threat. But for the personalist, he sees everything as Krishna's property to be used in Krishna's service. So every single square inch of the entire universe can be used for Krishna. Can be used to connect him with Krishna. It can be a job working at the office. Can be having a wife and children. Anything can be used to connect one with Krishna. So in this way, the personalist is very much on the safe side, whereas the impersonalist is very much in a dangerous position. Very dangerous position. And even if the impersonalist achieves perfection, Aruhya Krishna Parampadam Pada Padam Yuto Nadritya Yushman Angriya. Bhagavatam says, even if they achieve that spiritual Brahmanda, what happens? Patanti dho. They fall down after some time. Why? Because they have no regard for the lotus feet of the Lord. You see. They keep their pride. That's the point. I am God. You see. That is pride. They keep their pride. And therefore, even if they achieve the Brahmanda by doing severe penances and austerities, after some time, patanti adho, they fall down. Bhagavatam said. Actually, Bhagavatam describes their moksha as vimukti maninas, in the mind only. They think they're liberated, that's all. They're not actually liberated. If you want actual liberation, you want actual moksha that is permanent, then take to Krishna Bhakti. Then you will get permanent moksha. Any other questions?
Yeah. How what? Does the impersonalist come to the conclusion that God has had no form?
What is the question?
God has no name. How does the impersonalist come to the conclusion that God has got no form?
How the impersonalist come to the conclusion that God has no form?
Ah, yes. Actually, there is a subtle distinction between an impersonalist and a Mayavadi. An impersonalist is someone who is he has simply heard about the impersonal Brahman conception, and it has attracted him, and he is trying to take shelter of that conception. The impersonalist is not the Brahmavadi or impersonalist. He is not necessarily going to deny that God has a personality. The Mayavadi does. So Prabhupada one time made this distinction between Mayavadi and Brahmavadi, or impersonal. The Brahmavadi, he is simply advanced to the platform of impersonal Brahma. If he meets a Vaishnava and he hears that God has a form, he immediately says, yes, very nice. That's what happened with Shukadev, you see. He was not Mayavadi. Nor were the Kumaras also. They were not Mayavadi. They were all impersonalists. But by coming in contact with the transcendental platform, Vaishnav platform, they retracted to come to Vaishnava understanding. So the Mayavadi, he comes to the conclusion that God has no personality because he's envious. He wants to put himself as the Supreme. He's envious. Therefore, he's very happy to accept this impersonal idea, formless idea. Because this gives him the scope to think that he is God. It's a very convenient thing. If you can take away the potency of God, take away his qualities, his characteristics, his activities. If you accept God with form and activities, then how you can compete with Krishna? How's it possible, dude? Can you lift Govardhan Hill on your little finger? Can you attract 16,000 beautiful women to dance with you in the moonlit night? Is it? If we accept that God has a form and a personality, how we can compete with Him? But if we deny His form and His personality, then we can think, yes, I am God. So, because the Mayavadi, impersonalist, is envious of God, therefore, he's very happy to accept this idea that God does not have a personality. But actually, that's not a very intelligent thing. God is the Supreme, by definition. That means he possesses more than anybody else. How you can have personality and God cannot? That makes you greater than God. I mean, this is so... A little 6-year-old child can understand this logic. If you have a person and God doesn't, that means you're greater than God. You have a personality and God does not have a personality. It's absurd. You cannot possess something more than God does. He's the Supreme, by definition. Therefore, God must have personality also. But the difference is he doesn't have a personality like you and me. You see, it's limited in so many ways. His personality is absolutely unlimited. He can manifest millions and trillions and quadrillions of forms all over the universe at the same time, each one doing a different thing. We can't even manifest two forms, but to speak of trillions of forms. Krishna has form, he has personality, but he's not, that form and personality is not limited, like our form and personality are limited. You see, that's the difference. Achintya, Krishna, achintya. His form, achintya rupa, achintya lila, everything, achintya shakti, everything, achintya, achintya, achintya. But Krishna. Everything, achintya. Next question.
X-stages of bhakti. So, how can we know which stage we are?
Yeah.
And one more way.
There are 8 stages of bhakti. So how you can know what stage you are on? Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anartinavritti, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, and Prema. So how you can know what stage you are on? Do you have any idea what stage you are on? You're struggling at the anartha nirvritti level now. Yeah. Yes, one can actually, one can know. The first stage is simple, that you have some faith in the Krishna consciousness devotees, they're very nice. That is called Shraddha. The second stage is you associate with the devotees. The third stage is you accept guru, initiation, vachana kriya, and engage in the activities of bhakti. The fourth stage is anartha nirvritti, where you're battling it out with the mind and the six senses, which include the mind. It's a daily battlefield of Kurukshetra every day. When you get up, you're back on the battlefield again, fighting it out with your senses. Once your senses are subdued, you've got them totally under control, then you really start to taste the sweet nectar of the name, that is ruchi. Oh yeah, we left out one, nishta. So that makes nine. That's right. Between anartha nirvritti and ruchi, there is nishta, fixed. Prabhupada used to say, fixed up devotee, solid, see? Pakka. Pakka Vaishnava. When you're very solid, that is called nishta platform. If you're not sure where you're at, that means you're definitely not on the nishta stage yet. Because when you're nishta, you're not wondering. There's no more confusion in the nishta stage. Everything's very clear. There's not like, oh, I don't know, maybe this, maybe that. See, that's not steady. Maybe this, maybe that. You're not on the nishta stage. If you take in diksha, and you're true to your vows, then you're on the anartha nirvritti platform until, you know, you made a lot of progress. And gradually you'll come out of anartha nirvritti, the nishta, ruchi, asakti, bhava, and prana. Yeah.
Isn't it a safe position for a devotee to remain on the level with anartha nirvritti?
Huh?
Isn't it a safe position for a devotee to feel to be on the anartha nirvritti side?
Even one who becomes on the level of prema, he will act on the level of anartha nirvritti to show example. Not that one holds oneself back, but practically speaking, we are so contaminated in this present age that we will probably be battling it out in anartha nirvritti until our last dying breath. I mean, that's not would not be considered an unusual thing, because it's the Kali Yuga. So even if you remain at an anartha nirvritti stage throughout your whole life, Mataji doesn't want to be in the picture, that's all. But if you sneak it in, she won't be able to do anything about it. So anyway, even if you remain at an anartha nirvritti, if you're really sincerely trying to go higher throughout the whole life, that sincerity will be accepted by Krishna and he'll take you back to Godhead. Even if you never got it beyond anartha nirvritti, if you were sincerely battling it out at the anartha nirvritti stage throughout the whole life, Krishna will still take you. Sincerity is the key. Sincerely trying to conquer over the anartha. And if you can, you know, and it's possible, you can actually become solidly fixed. Get that ruchi. You can act, all those stages can be achieved while, even while you're in this body.
body, but in the outcome, right? If I think that I'm a fixed up devotee, that is anartha.
Yeah. I'm thinking, yes, now I am in the nishtha stage. That means you're not really there yet because you're proudly thinking you're on the nishtha platform. That's why to always think oneself as a sadhaka in the anartha nivritti stage is the safe position. Even if the fact is that even the pure devotees who achieve prema, they think that they feel themselves to be on the anartha nivritti platform. That's what they feel about themselves in their humility. So that's always the best thing, to consider oneself. Even if you're on the prema level, to always think that I'm battling it out on the anartha nivritti platform. That's the best, that's the safest position. And it's not just thinking for us right now. It's not just thinking that we really are doing that right now. You know, the alarm clock goes off in the morning, we don't want to get up. You see, you just want to sleep. You see, that's anartha. Indian culture means you rise by 4 a.m., take your bath, chant the names of God. That is Indian culture. We are so mlechaized that we just want to sleep. Ah, sweet sleep. So, give up being mlechaized and become Krishnaized. That is our program. Rise by 4 a.m. Do your sadhana and then take a little nap if you need some more sleep. Take advantage of the early morning hours when the holy name is so powerful. It has extra shakti. Just like in Vrindavan, there is extra shakti. 1,000 times shakti. During that Brahma Muhurta, before the sunrise, there is 1,000 times shakti in the name. 1,000 times shakti. So take advantage of these things and then take a little nap later on. Any other questions?
So what is stopping us? What is stopping us
from doing that? What is stopping us from doing that?
Nothing. Nothing stopping you. So do that.
How can you know which stage of chanting we are out of 3 stages? Like, first stage we are not offensive, inoffensive.
Actually, one way of seeing it is very simple. A continuum from 0 to 100%. There's 100% pure on one end, there's 100% contaminated on the other end. Offensive stage, that's when you're 100% contaminated and zero purity. That's the offensive stage. The offensive stage is when you've got 100% purity and zero contamination. Every point in between is the clearing stage. So we start off at the offensive stage, but as soon as you sincerely thought, I want to achieve the Shuddhanam, as soon as you have that determination, you're immediately on the clearing state. And you start off, you know, 1% clear and 90%, 99% unclear, polluted. 1% clear, 99% polluted. Then you go to 2% clear and 98% polluted. And that way the clearing stage starts off very, very small, 0.00001% clear. And, you know, 99.999999% contaminated. You don't give up your enthusiasm, your determination. Just keep chanting 16 rounds every day. Follow your Guru Maharaj's instructions very sincerely. Follow, you know, avoid the sinful pillars, illicit sex, meeting, intoxication, gambling. And gradually you go 2% clear, 3% clear, 4% pure. In this way, gradually, 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 you get to the point 95% pure, 96% pure. And you can just gradually weed out all the inert. In this way.
Offensive chanting is also effective.
Yes, it has some potency. Because otherwise, how can you advance? Because our chanting is always somewhat offensive until we achieve Shuddhanam, but yet it is effective. If one is sincerely trying to advance, then they are chanting on the clearing stage, you see. You're sincerely trying to get free from the offenses. That means you're on the clearing stage. You're not on the offensive stage. That clearing stage has potency, even though it is still offensive to some extent. It has potency. Next question.
How to avoid Vaishnava pride?
The very simple way to overcome and prevent oneself from committing Vaishnava aparad is to always worship the devotees. If not openly, at least within your heart. You must worship every single Vaishnava. The big gurus and swamis and GBCs and temple presidents and the humble toilet cleaner. You must worship and appreciate the divine qualities of all the Vaishnavas. And then there'll be no room for any apura.
If we criticize some Vaishnava,
you should glorify.
How can we get out of it?
You glorify that Vaishnava.
No, if you come criticize some Vaishnava.
Yeah, if you've criticized them.
Where
did you criticize them? To their face or behind their back?
Yeah.
Who did you criticize them to someone else or just in your own mind? What is it?
It happens every time we talk. When the devotee is not present, we talk about that devotee.
And the next time you talk about that devotee, you should talk about his good qualities then. That will overcome the bad thing you say. Even if a devotee treated you unfairly, you should still be such a transcendentalist, you can find some nice quality. I have some godbrothers who have treated me very unfairly. And I could just go around criticizing them all the time if I wanted to. I mean, they deserve it. But that's not good for my Krishna consciousness. Nor is it good for my trying to have a better relationship with them in the future. So therefore, I try to always think about their wonderful qualities, their nice qualities, and appreciate those. And that's what you have to do. You may disagree with the devotee, that's all right. We don't have to all have the same opinion. But that doesn't mean you think that he's bad because he doesn't agree with you. You should think, well, maybe he was wrong on this point, but he has so many good qualities. I have to appreciate them. To have negative feelings about Vaishnavas kills the devotional creeper. You will get no taste for the name. When it comes time for japa, you'll think, I have no taste. Let me just, read the book in one hand and chant in the other. Hare Krishna, because I have no taste. You see. That comes from Vaishnava Parada. No taste for the name means Vaishnava Parada. So, you think, well, I may disagree with his behavior in this when he was doing that, but he has this nice quality. He's so dedicated. He gets up every morning. He comes to Mangalarti. He keeps nice tilak on the forehead. He keeps a nice sikha. In this way, he's very steady in his sadhana. In this way, you have to find some way to glorify every devotee, especially the ones that you have a tendency to criticize. Very important. Don't hold grudges. It will fill your heart with smudges. So you have to have a heart which is always appreciating the Vaishnavas. And then your heart will become very much appreciated by Srila Prabhupada, by your own spiritual master, and by Krishna. You have to try to become very, very dear to your Guru Maharaj, to Srila Prabhupada, and to Krishna, by always worshipping the divine qualities of all the Vaishnavas. Any other questions?
How was able to convert so many Muslims, Christians,
how you can convert all the Muslims, Christians, barbarians, and all the people?
It's very simple. The formula is very simple.
How Prabhupada did it?
How Prabhupada did it. That's all right. Still, it's the same answer. The answer I was going to give you, it's still the same answer. Yeah. The formula is very simple. You simply must convert yourself, that's it. If you want to convert the world to Vaishnavism, you must become fully converted yourself. You have to give up the anarthas, the lust, anger, and greed that sits in our hearts. It is our worst enemy for preaching this Krishna consciousness. So each and every one of us, not only you, but we all, have to become very, very pure. If we can become pure, even if only one of us can become pure, what does Krishna say? Yad yad acharati shreshtas tattareve tarojana. So yat pramanam kurute lokastadanavartate. Whatever a great man does, the whole world follows in his footsteps. Whatever standard he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So if you want to convert the Muslims and the Christians and the atheists and the Jains and everyone to Krishna consciousness, then you simply have to become a pure devotee, that's all. Give up your attachment for material sense gratification by taking complete total shelter of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. Any other questions? So, there's nothing else. Can move on to the next program. What's the next program? You're the host. What is the next program? Any more questions?
Symptoms of Vaishnava Aparad.
Vaishnava Aparad means anything which inhibits one's ability to love the devotees. The symptom is you're no longer enthusiastic to serve them. You take it as a drudgery, not as a joy. Actually, to serve the Vaishnava, it is the greatest honor, the greatest blessing. But if we take it, it simply is some chore that we have to do. I don't really want to do it, but I have to do it. Then we have come to the level of aparad. It's aparad or aparad? Aparad. Any other question?
Who is a Vaishnava? Prabhupada tells in one of his lectures that anybody who chants his name once also is a Vaishnava. So that's what the...
Yeah, so we have to learn to be respectful to everyone then. How many people in the world have said the name Hare Krishna? They may say, oh, those Hare Krishnas, I hate them. But they just said Hare Krishna. And they became accepted on one level as a devotee because they said Hare Krishna. These names are very powerful. Anyone who says Hare Krishna even once, their material life is doomed. You've all chanted tonight in the kirtan, so your material life is finished. You have no hope now for material sense enjoyment. You have no choice except to surrender to Krishna fully. You may say, oh, you tricked me. Well, it's too late now. You've all chanted Hare Krishna. So now you have nothing to do except surrender. You can stay in your home, you can stay with your family, keep your job. You must purify your consciousness. You must become saintly. You cannot remain a worldly man any longer now. You must become saintly. Any other question? Yes. Yes. Instead of thinking, how can I get satisfaction from the name? The trick is this. Think, how can I chant in such a way that Krishna will get satisfaction by my chanting? That's the easy way, you see. Ask not what the holy name can do for you. Ask not what Krishna can do for you. But ask what you can do for Krishna. You see, that's the move. I stole that from John F. Kennedy. He said, ask not what your country can do for you, what you can do for your country. It's a wonderful concept. We simply have to apply that to Krishna. That's all. Ask not what Krishna can do for you, but ask what you can do for Krishna. It's a famous moment in American history when he said that. He did his hand like this, but asked what you can do for your country. He was a very expert speaker, Mr. Kennedy. Very powerful, very effective. The only problem was he wasn't Krishna conscious. Actually, Krishna consciousness had not yet come to America at that time. The American people were not ready for it. But that is the principle. If you will simply see how you can chant in such a way that Lord Sri Krishna will be very pleased with you for chanting in that way.
Isn't it sufficient to think that because Krishna wants me to chant, I want to chant? Krishna wants me to chant his name, so let me chant.
Yes, and how does he want you to chant? That you must tell him. He wants you to chant like a child crying for your mother, helplessly crying out. The child, study the mood of the child when he cries for the mother. He feels totally helpless, that he has no shelter except for the mother. So you must feel, I have no shelter except for Krishna. And that you are desperately in need of His mercy. Desperately. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama,
Hare Rama, Rama Rama,
Hare
Hare.
Desperately you need His mercy to save you from your dangerous position. In this mood you must chant. That's the mood that Krishna wants. Like a child crying for mother. You will chant in that mood, which gives the greatest happiness to Krishna. then he will bestow upon you unlimited satisfaction. You will taste unlimited nectar in the names. Any other question?
How to strengthen your commitment or determination towards bhakti?
About increase your determination for what?
Towards bhakti.
How to increase the determination for increasing resolve. Towards bhakti?
Yeah. The way to increase your determination for bhakti is first of all to understand you have no choice. That's the first thing. You have to understand it's bhakti or nothing. There's nothing else that will satisfy you except for bhakti. This is stated in the Bhagavatam. Ahaitaki apratiyata yayatma supersedati. You must engage in unmotivated, uninterrupted bhakti if you want satisfaction in life. So the first thing you have to understand is I can never be satisfied unless I take to pure bhakti. Without any interruption, 24 hours, pure bhakti. If you have that understanding, it's bhakti or nothing. You're totally convinced that I have no shelter but Radha and Krishna. If you're completely convinced of this fact, then automatically you will have the determination. You simply have to have the conviction. And then determination will follow automatically. Just as my hand moves, the shadow moves with it. So when your conviction is strong, the determination will automatically be there. And conviction is developed by submissively hearing from Guru and from advanced devotees of the world. That will give you conviction. Do you be reading Bhagavad Gita as it is by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada? You have that book? You do. Yeah. So if you read, the more you will read Prabhupada's books, this will increase your conviction. And the more your conviction increases, then you can become more and more fixed in your determination.
Do you attend the lectures in the temple?
Sometimes. But last 3 years I was in Delhi, so regularly attending. But now very far.
You are in the e-course? You are too far?
Yeah.
Oh, you're on the e-course.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. What is your name? Have you written me ever?
Yeah. Sachindra Kumar Pathak.
Sachindra Kumar Pathak.
Pathak. Very nice. Where's everyone else's plate? How they will be served. So you're chanting 16 rounds regularly? You chanting 2 rounds regularly? 2 or more?
In the morning also I chant while moving around, while having a walk.
Yeah.
In the evening when I come back from the office, very late, so I keep on chanting for 1.5 hours. But
yeah, I remember now, you were telling me about those long walks. Yeah, I remember you.
Yeah. You don't have mala?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Chanting and walking, well that's all right.
Mala, on the mala you chant?
So, everyone else, what's the story in everyone else's prasadam? Coming? One plate at a time?
Okay, what is the significance of the panty mala? Why do we wear it?
What is the significance of panty mala? Why do we wear it?
Yes, but there's not the dog, where the dog wears dog collar, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we are the dogs of God. We are God's dogs. Yeah. This shows that I have a master. The street dog, he has no collar, you see. But in a very dangerous position to be a street dog in India. But if you have a master, just like on Juhu Beach, we see the wealthy businessmen, they walk with their dog. The dog has nice color. He's very jolly, fatty, stout and strong. Very jolly, happy dog. You see, he has master. So, we wear these Kunti Mala. At initiation, we give 3 strands. You see. So, this means I have master. Therefore, I'm jolly. I have no anxiety. My master is protecting me in all times, places, and circumstances. He's guiding me, blessing me, and protecting me always, 24 hours a day, all over the world. You take shelter of a bona fide guru, then you're always protected. You're never in fearful condition. You're always protected.
In the stage of prema
without initiation. Well, it'd be a little difficult because initiation is the third step, bhajana kriya. Without initiation, you can't go anywhere beyond them. You can't even get an artanavritti without initiation. What to speak of nishta, ruchi, asakti, bhava, or prema. Without initiation, you won't make advancement. That's required. And initiation is not optional. It's required. That's why it's stated in the Mundaku Upanishad, tad viginartam sagurum eva vigatsyat. You know Sanskrit grammar? Vidhi-lin form of the verb, gatsyat, that is vidhi-lin form. It means there is no option. It is compulsory. The go verb, gachati, gachanti, you see, but gachat form, it means must go to. So it is not optional. If you want to know that transcendental science, tad viganar tam saguru meva vigat chat. You must have guru if you want to know that transcendental science. If you don't know transcendental science, there is no question of prema. A guru is required. Prabhupada clearly states in the Nectar of Devotion, without initiation, Krishna does not accept your service. It's heavy. You think you can achieve prema if Krishna is not accepting your service? No, it's not possible. It's stated right there in the introduction of the Nectar of Devotion. Without initiation, Krishna does not accept your service. What's happening back there? Are more plates coming?
Yeah,
okay.
Good.